something to drink.
Thank you so much for having me here tonight. I'm really grateful to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I always am, and it's an honor to be here. And my name is Jenny E., and I'm an alcoholic, and my sobriety date is November 1st, 2009, and I have a sponsor in Midtown's my home group. And, you know, I really like that passage that you just read because that's, you know, why I love coming to meetings, is being able to hear people's stories and relate in, you know, and to know that I'm not alone and be reminded of where I came from, you know, or to see that newcomer come in the door who is scared and angry and isn't quite sure if they belong here, and to be able to reach out my hand and to introduce myself and to try to make them feel comfortable, and then to tell them my story and share with them my experience here, you know. And I'm very grateful because that's exactly what happened for me. And it took me a little while to get sober. I had to try it my way for a long time, you know. And I'll tell you a little bit about that tonight. But, you know, I'm really grateful and, you know, hopefully, you know, God willing, and if I continue to do the actions here, my sobriety date will stay, you know, the day it is. Because, you know, I was in a really desperate place, you know, and willing to do whatever it took when I got here. But I'll go back and tell you a little bit about what it was like. So I started drinking when I was 14, and I loved it. You know, when I think back, you know, I was someone who was always uncomfortable, and I was someone who was very anxious. I was a worrier. My dad used to tell me, there wasn't something to worry about. You seem to find something to worry about. I just was never at peace. And I was just someone who was constantly concerned about what others were thinking about me. I never felt comfortable in my own skin. And, you know, I don't know if all those things make me alcoholic, but I do know that when I took a drink, it did something where I didn't feel those things anymore. And I absolutely loved the feeling that I got from drinking alcohol. And not only did it make me feel more comfortable in my own skin, not only did it shut the noise down in my head, but it made me able to view life differently. You know, everything around me changed. My perception absolutely changed with alcohol, and I sought it from the beginning, you know. And you know, in high school, I really did not suffer many consequences. I just knew that if there was opportunity to drink, I was going to take it. The only thing I worried about was just mitigating the consequences of what would happen after. Otherwise, you know, it was on. And you know, I was absolutely drinking from effect from day one, you know. And I think when it really started to progress for me was in college. You know, I got to college, and I was so excited to be there, and I was excited for the freedom that came with it, and suddenly alcohol was so much more readily available than it had been. And so I took full advantage of all those opportunities to drink. And I joined a sorority, and that was the center of the social life, was drinking. And I honestly didn't think at that time and for a long time after that my drinking was very different from other people's. You know, the way I drank in college was I would work hard during the week and then I would binge drink from Thursday on. And I just would go for it, you know. And I can remember when I thought back to my drinking in college, I actually can physically remember having a thought one night where I wasn't able to drink as much as I wanted. Why would anybody only have one or two drinks? That is crazy. Like, this is awful. I would rather actually just not drink because I am so uncomfortable right now that I'm insane. I'm crawling in my skin because I want that next drink and I'm not able to get it, you know? And at the time, I was just like, to me, it was just like, well, I figured out that I don't want to just have one or two. Like, that's stupid, you know? But, like, pretty much my drinking throughout college was just drinking as much as I could get my hands on, you know? And the consequences weren't that. I had consequences in college, but they weren't enough to make me pause, you know? I wound up in the hospital as a result of my drinking. I woke up on floors, my panties down to my, you know, my feet, wondering what happened, having no idea where I am in the middle of New York City. You know, I had things like that happen, but it was just like, well, that's par for the course. This is college. Things happen. It's not a big deal. I was just partying and having fun, you know? And so I just dismissed it. And I hurt relationships. You know, I acted poorly. You know, I was not the type of person that, like, you wanted to bring out with you as their date to any type of occasion because I was a mess. And I was going to get attention wherever I could get attention, you know. And I didn't care if that hurt you or if that hurt your girlfriend or I just cared about me having fun. And a lot of times I didn't remember, like, what happened. I was a blackout drinker pretty much from that point forward, you know. And I would wake up and look at my phone or try to figure out where I was and try to piece the night together. Because what I also had going for me and what I always had going for me for a long time was that I looked sweet and I knew that if I apologized and said I was so sorry and went to any length that I could to make up for what I did the night before, people usually would forgive me. You know, they'd be like, oh, Jenny was just drinking. What happened later on, as you'll see, is that people got tired of that. You know, like, that's not okay after a period of time of doing the same thing over and over again. But at that point, it was still working for me. And, you know, so I got through college, and I got a job at a school that I was really excited about. I was working for an automobile company, and I was going to be a zone manager. And my job responsibilities were to manage dealerships in a geographic location or manage communications with those dealerships. And I was sure that when I got out there, it was going to be awesome. You know, like life was starting. I had made it, you know. And basically they sent me out to St. Louis, Missouri, and that was my territory, and I didn't know anybody. But I got out there, and I was ready, you know, to do my job. And what I found was I became very uncomfortable very quickly. I no longer had access to alcohol the way that I did in college. I didn't have anybody to drink with, so the party scene wasn't there anymore that made it okay for me to drink the way I wanted to drink. And so I, you know, became very irritable. I became very uncomfortable. I was hysterical. I'd have, like, panic attacks on the phone with my father. And what eventually I sought out is I learned how to drink by myself. You know, I finally found some people that I could connect with, and I started drinking with them. And the minute I started drinking with them, I was right back to where I was, like, in college, where I was drinking to oblivion, blacking out, not remembering anything. And what I found was people weren't drinking as much, and I was getting frustrated that they weren't drinking as much. I can remember leaving a party and not being ready to go and being like, why are we leaving? And we went someplace else, and people had already pre-gamed there. And when the guy that I was with was in the bathroom, I walked around to try and find if there was alcohol, like, in any of the drinks left, you know, to try and find if there's just a little bit of alcohol left in that bottle, you know, and I would drink it. I didn't care. You know, I just needed it. I knew I needed it, and I couldn't tell you why, but I wanted it, you know. And so then what I decided was this is stupid. That night didn't work out the way I wanted to. I still didn't get as much alcohol as I wanted. I started, like, I would leave a bottle of vodka in my apartment just in case. And if I came home and I wasn't at the point where I was satisfied, I drank that vodka, you know. And I didn't see anything wrong with it. I just saw, you know, I hadn't finished. And what eventually happened was I went pretty crazy there. I had some outside issues come up, and my dad had to come and take me to the hospital. And I wound up quitting the job and moving home with my parents. And I moved home with my parents, and I thought, okay, things are going to be different. I'm going to get things under control. The problem was that I didn't have a good group of friends out there that I could be social with and be comfortable with. So that was the problem, and that's why I felt so crazy, and now I'll be home, and it'll be so much better. And that was totally not the case. Basically, what happened from there was I had learned how to drink by myself. And I crossed that line, and that was okay, you know. And so what I started doing was I did get a job, but I started drinking in the basement. You know, my parents have had a basement room with a bathroom and a kitchen that they opened up to me, you know, and let me live there so I didn't have to pay rent because I wasn't in a good financial position. And I would go to the liquor store on the way home and hide wine or alcohol in my bag and come in and say hi to my parents and go into the basement and just drink until I passed out, you know. And I didn't see anything wrong with that because I could show up for work, you know, the next day. That was the deal. And, you know, and I met a guy and I started dating this guy and he liked to drink the way that I drank, you know. And what that did for me was it enabled me to have a drinking partner, you know, somebody that I could drink with. And I wasn't drinking alone, even though I, at that point, didn't really care if I was drinking alone, but it was more fun, you know. And if anything happened, like if my mom found the bottles that had been hiding in the closet, or if there was an empty bottle laying somewhere, like under my bed, someplace where I'd probably hidden it because I hadn't quite gotten to the point where I was, you know, I would take the trash out and hide it from my parents and put it in my car and go to work and then on the way home stop by the dumpster and go to different dumpsters around the area so I was never going to the same one. If I hadn't quite gotten to that yet, I would say, oh, you know, me and my boyfriend at the time had, you know, we drank that together and it's just accumulation of over the months. And really it would have been like from that night or like, and it had been me by myself. Maybe he had been there, but predominantly it had been me, you know. But I would use him as an excuse for any sort of issues that might come up with my parents, you know, like it was his fault. I also started to get violent, which was something that began to occur for me when I would drink. I didn't like people telling me that I couldn't drink anymore or that I needed to stop or slow down. And the guy I was dating got to a point where he was actually getting a little tired of my drinking and he was getting tired of showing up to places and I would be already wasted. And so he would try and stop my drinking. And my reaction, which I had to piece together the next day, was to lash out at him, to hit him, to get into a physical fight with him over him trying to stop my drinking, to make a scene, you know. He would have scratches all over him, just like I just turned into a different person. And I couldn't believe that that was me. You know, I was like, really? What did you do to provoke me? You know, I always wanted to blame somebody else for my actions. And I thought it was his fault. So we would take breaks from dating and then get back together and so forth. And what eventually happened was I decided that the problem was that I was living in the basement of my parents' house and that I was feeling too constricted and that if I got an apartment with a friend that I would feel better about myself and that things would get easier for me and that I would be okay. And so, you know, I found this woman, bless her heart, someone I had to make amends to later, who needed a roommate. Her roommate was going to Texas for training for 6 months, and she needed someone to fill that space in her apartment in D.C. for 6 months. And we worked together, and, you know, my big thing, and you'll see this throughout my story, was that I would show up to work and I would do my job well, you know, and it would be, you know, hungover and just like totally out of it. But as long as I showed up, as long as I got the job done, I thought everything was okay too. And so she knew that side of me, you know, and she got to know the side of me that drank once I moved in with her. And so I was quite sure that like when I moved in, I wasn't going to be drinking by myself anymore because now I had a social scene. And I wouldn't feel the need to drink as much. And it took a week for me to get right back into the swing of things, you know. And now it was, I had to pick out the liquor stores where I would usually get, like, you know, one or two bottles of wine, or I'd get vodka, just dependent, that were on my way home. And I would go to different places, you know, because I didn't want to go too often to one place, you know. And I would drink in my room by myself and fall asleep. At this point, you know, I was, like, starting to wet the bed. But I didn't really think anything of that. You know, that was no big deal. Take care of that later. As long as nobody knows, it doesn't matter. And I was still dating this guy. And we continued to have a tumultuous relationship. And it began to impact my roommate, you know. Like, we would get into these crazy fights. And I would come sobbing to her. And she would be trying to clean up the mess, you know, and just be bewildered, like, what is going on? And she would take me out to places, and it had gotten to the point that where if someone took me out, you were embarrassed that I was the one who came along. You know, it was like the night would start out great, and then by the end of the night, I don't remember what I did, but I would be doing something that would embarrass you, you know, like to the point where she had to say something to me about it, you know. And so that gave me a resentment. And it made me think that, well, that's why I should, you know, maybe just stay drinking by myself, because clearly when I'm going out, I'm making more of a fool of myself. So it just justified my drinking alone, you know. And so what eventually happened was, you know, I moved out of that apartment, because once again, I thought, the problem is that I'm not getting along with my roommate, so I need to move in someplace by myself. And so I moved into a place by myself in Roslyn. And my drinking just kind of continued like that for a little bit, you know. And I would drink almost every day, every other day at night by myself in my apartment. And then I would go into work, and I did a good job, and I got promoted. And it wasn't really impacting anything too much at that point, because I was living alone. You know, I was just being impacted on the inside, you know, like I was just becoming more and more isolated, more and more fearful of other people, more and more rigid with my schedule. You know, like I was trying really hard to like make everything revolve around my drinking at this point. It was really protecting it, you know, like, I didn't want to let people in, because the last experience I had with that with my boyfriend was that he tried to have me stop drinking, and I was still sort of together with him at that point, but, like, I didn't want anyone to tell me that I had to stop, you know, and I wouldn't have told you that then. Then I thought I was just making my schedule the way I needed it to be able to fit in everything I wanted to do, which was to drink, but I can see that now. And so I eventually got to a point where I threw such a scene with the guy that I was dating that it impacted everyone he lived with. It impacted a whole house, and I was just making up stuff. Like, I don't remember what I said, but I went on basically kind of like a rampage around the house one night because he wanted me to stop drinking. And when I woke up, it was told to me that I had done all this stuff, and then I had hid in the closet naked, and then I had pooped and peed myself all over the closet, and that's where my boyfriend found me, was hiding in the closet, you know. And I was so humiliated by that. I was like, oh my gosh, this is awful. I can't believe this happened. I'm so embarrassed. Like, I've been wetting the bed, but, you know, people didn't know that, and this is like the new level. So I was like, well, he was like, I think you need to do something about your drinking. And I was like, okay. So one night while I was drinking by myself, I did some research online, and I found AA. And I took that question, the little quiz that you can take, and I answered a lot of them yes, but I had a lot of, I've never done that. I haven't drank in the morning. I haven't done this yet. But I definitely answered a lot yes. And so I ordered the big book, which you could do online. I figured out how to do it because I didn't want anyone to know I was buying it. And I had it sent to my apartment, and I read it a little, and I relate it, you know. And that scared me. It scared me so much, you know. But at that point, my thought was, okay, I have this book. It's going to be like a do-it-yourself book. I'll do it myself. because I don't want any help with that, and I certainly don't want to go into a room full of people and ask people for help. That sounds awful, you know. And I tried that, you know, and slowly, like, I would get a couple days, and I would just be like, I can't take it, I'm going to go crazy. And I would get to that point where I'd, like, just be so uncomfortable. I was like, this is stupid. Why did I think that way? I don't know what I was thinking, you know, like, this is dumb. It wasn't that bad. And I would drink again, you know. And so I kind of started this little battle within myself, you know. And eventually I decided, okay, I'm going to try a meeting. Maybe that'll help. And I went to the meeting, and I got to the door, and I wasn't ready yet. You know, I looked inside, and I was like, I'm not alcoholic. I took this too far. I still got this. There's no way I don't have control, and I don't need help from any of those people. And I left, and I put the big book in my closet. You know, to this day, I don't know why I didn't throw it out. I put it aside, I put it somewhere where I didn't have to see it. I kept it, and then I went on drinking, you know, and I eventually broke up with that boyfriend, and I kind of continued down my road, and, the next phase of my drinking was that it started to impact my job. You know, I wasn't able to always show up. I had a good reputation with the people I worked with, so I could play the sick card. I would sleep in and then get online and do some work so it looked like I was doing something. And I would get away with it, you know. But it bothered me, because that was the thing I held on to. You know, like, my job, I still have my job. Okay, I'm doing good at that. As long as that looks okay, my parents are happy, I'm bringing in money, I can support myself, I'm okay. But I was getting a little scared that it was getting impacted, you know, as I could tell. So I was trying to be more and more careful, and I still had that thought in my mind that, like, you did consider the idea that you're an alcoholic, you know, you did relate to this, maybe there's some things you need to do to, like, curb your drinking. And so I tried to control it, you know, and I did a lot of different things. I got a cat, because I love animals, and I was totally positive that if I took care of this beautiful cat who I love so much to this day, who's still with me, that I would have something to take care of. And if I had something to take care of that I loved, that I wouldn't drink as much. And then again, pattern continues. Lasted a couple of days, and then I can have one or two, and one or two was never one or two, you know. So then I tried measuring my alcohol, because I thought if I measured it out, maybe that would help me to, like, control the amount that I was having, and if I had a preset number in mind, then I would be okay, and I would get to the second one, and I'd forget all those ideas. You know, it would be like, nah, oh, whatever. That was a bad idea. You know, and then I would be off to the races. And then, I tried working out in the morning. So I was like, well, I'm going to get up in the morning. That's going to be my incentive. If I get to the gym, my body was always something that was very important to me. So I was like, well, if I make that a priority again, I bet you that's the way I can get myself back on track. And that didn't work, but a couple days. And I kind of just had this struggle. And then I would, like, give up, you know, like, kind of just be like, all right, whatever. And then during those times, things started to happen. And the consequences began to build up, you know. So things like, you know, I would, gosh, there's so many, but I would go into a work event, and I would say, I'm only going to have one or two tonight, and that wouldn't happen. I went to a work event at my boss's house, and I was close to her, and I was just going to have one or two glasses of wine, and I had really drank a lot the night before, so I was still feeling sick, and I was like, well, I'm still feeling sick, so I probably won't drink as much. That's a good thing. I can probably do one or two. And I did one or two, and I don't remember, like, anything after that. And what I do remember is bits and pieces and then getting the story recounted to me. You know, I got totally drunk. My direct report at the time had to take me home. And on the way home, we got on the metro, and I fell up or down a flight of stairs, I don't know which, and I hit my head, and she had to take me to the hospital. And I was in the hospital, and I have vague recollections of, like, being in a hospital bed and, like, moaning and complaining and someone saying, how much did she drink tonight? And seeing her sitting there just, like, totally, you know, at a loss to what to do with me. And then I remember waking up, and I remember waking up with footies on and a band on my wrist and not really remembering anything else, you know, except for those bits and pieces. And so I woke up in her apartment on her couch. She had taken me home with her to make sure I was okay. And she kind of pieced some things together for me. And I was like, well, I really appreciate what you did for me. I'm so sorry. I don't know what was, you know, I've just been under a lot of stress lately. You know, you have to excuse it. And she was like, I understand. You know, things can be stressful. You know, things can be stressful. I was like, I just got to get home and get ready so I can go into work. You know, and I went home and I had a black eye. And I had, you know, cut off my little wristband, but I covered it up. And I went into work, and in my mind, it was like, I made it to work. You know, I'm okay. You know, scratch the fact that I was at a party with all these work people last night that I got completely obliterated at. They know that I got totally drunk. As long as I'm there, I save that face, you know. And I got there, and they were having meetings at the Reagan Center, and I was there for that, and I was so sick. And then, you know, I just remember being like, you just got to stay awake. You just got to stay awake. You just got to get through this meeting. And at one point, sickness just overcame me. And I remember leaving to go to the bathroom, and I threw up all over the Reagan floor, you know, all over the hallway. And I looked around, and nobody was there. And I was like, that didn't happen. You know, and that's just kind of how I thought. You know, like, nobody saw. It doesn't matter. You know, and that's just how I live my life. You know, as long as you didn't know, it was all good. So I went to the bathroom and threw up some more and then came back and poor janitor had already cleaned it up. You know, I mean, somebody probably saw me throw up, obviously. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been cleaned up that fast. But nobody that meant anything to me, you know. And so after that, the next day, my boss pulled me into her office and she said, Jenny, HR should be here. You know, you're really lucky that I'm not pulling them in. I'm just going to take your word that nothing like that is ever going to happen again. She's like, because that's not acceptable. And now she didn't know I fell down the stairs. She didn't know about the hospital incident. She just knew how drunk I got, you know. And I was like, sounds good to me, you know. And I was like, I'm so sorry. I apologize. And then I tried, you know, I tried for a good week to not drink because that was pretty bad, you know. And then I drank again. You know, I just couldn't stop, you know. And so I drank again, and I was like, well, now you really have to do a better job of hiding it from work. That's the issue. You know, drinking at work events is a bad idea. So that's where you really need to get yourself straightened out. So I tried to do that, and I can remember going to some work events and just being so angry. Like, I would just watch people drink wine, and I would be like, why can they drink and I can't? That's so unfair. This is so wrong. Like, I was angry, you know? I didn't want to give up drinking. And so I would last for, like, a little bit, and then I'd go home and drink, you know? And then I remember I had a work trip that was supposed to be like this big deal that I had the opportunity to go to our San Francisco office and work with some people there, and they were like, "Are you excited? You're going to go to San Francisco and, you know, get to spend some time there?" And I was like, "No, because now I can't drink for like 4 days, and I'm going to be with work people. It's going to be really stressful. It sounds awful." And so I remember planning the whole trip out, like how I was not going to drink at these work functions, you know, because I didn't want to get in trouble. And one of the things they did was they always try to do something fun for us. They were just trying to do something fun. And they did this little cruise that was like a dinner cruise that you went out on. And everybody got to leave work early, and we went on this little cruise. And it was obviously there was going to be alcohol. So I was like, okay, I'm going to tell everybody that I get really sick when, you know, I get really seasick and that it's a really bad idea, you know, for me to drink because I know that I'm already going to be nauseous and we just don't want to add those two things together. So I told everybody that, you know. And so then I got on the boat and I was stuck, you know. And I knew there was no alcohol waiting for me at home, you know. And I was just brewing, you know, I was just brewing. And I was like, it's fine, it's fine. Everything's going to be okay. I got this. Just got to get through it, think of things to talk about. And it was like my body couldn't function. It was like, I have to have something to drink. And before I knew it, you know, I was getting in line, planning, I'm going to get an orange juice. That's what I'm going to get. And instead, I got wine, you know. And I was like, get that, you know, and then I started drinking. And then I don't remember the rest of the night. My manager, different manager, I had two at the time, who had to walk me home. I barely remember getting into my hotel room. I woke up the next morning and I was so sick, you know. But I went in to the office and I was like, you know, throwing up in the bathroom, falling asleep at my computer, just trying to get through the day. I just had to show up. And I remember that night just being like, man, like, I had a plan, you know, and it didn't work out. And I was frustrated, you know, because I was really scared that I was going to get back to my boss and I was going to lose my job, you know, like my more senior boss. And I remember the next day we were flying back and I just couldn't wait to get home. And the first thing I did was drink, you know, I was just like, oh. Thank God, all that stress, all that anxiety is gone. I'm so happy to be home, you know. And it didn't get back to my boss, thank goodness. But I again tried to control my drinking because I was really nervous about what was going to happen. And I remember making lists of all the different things that had happened up until that point and taping them around my apartment and putting them on my mirror and putting them on my, you know, my cabinet that was to my glasses, and I remember throwing out, you know, wine openers and stuff so that I wouldn't have things at my fingertips, you know, and I would remember feeling good for a couple of days, you know, and then it would be like somewhere through, at some point halfway through the day, I would become so obsessed with getting a drink, you know, I'd have to go to the bathroom and talk to myself, you know, and just go back and forth. You're not going to drink today. No, I think you really do. You do need a drink. Well, if you don't, it just this jibber-jabber, it was just so insane. And in the bathroom, just like, make it stop, make it stop, make it stop. And to the point I was like, I'm going to drink because it's going to stop. You know, and then I would drink, and then I would be remorseful. And then I would wait a day or two, and then I'd be drinking again, and it kind of just, like, went like that, you know, and I'd have acceptance with my drinking at some points, and then not acceptance, and then I remember, you know, my grandpa died, and I went, and I was very close to my grandpa, he was someone who's very important to me, and I remember I went up to see him, and I got there, and I was the only one in the family who got there. I drank the night before, but I got up, you know, I drank the night before, and I was crying over my grandpa, and, you know, everything, and but I got up and I drove to New Jersey and I got there and he was really sick. And I called my dad and I was like, you need to come. And my dad flew in from wherever he was and my grandpa got rushed to the hospital. And that was the first time I you know, thank God, because I know this isn't everybody's experience, I didn't drink for a couple days. Like, I got to a week. And that was the longest I'd ever gotten up to that point without drinking. I got really sick while I was up there. Which I think was part of the help, and I was just kind of in a state, you know, and I am grateful that I didn't drink through that, but the first thing I did when I got home was I drank, you know, I got in the door, and I was drinking, you know, and I was depressed because I remember my grandpa being like, you know, he was passing away, and he was like, you know, make sure that you make your dad proud, and all I kept thinking when he said that was, to this point, if my dad knew any of the stuff that was really going on with my life, he wouldn't be proud of me at all. He would be so sad, you know. And I struggled with that. And eventually I got to the point where I was willing to try AA again. And I came to a meeting on February 14th. That's what I did with my Valentine's Day. You know, I came to a meeting, and I was very scared, and I came in this time, you know. And I remember this girl came up to me, and she became my first sponsor, you know. And she really tried to reach out to me, and I related to her. And she was so nice, and she just tried to get me to go to meetings with her, and she tried to read with me and explain the big book. And she just spent so much time with me, you know. And I really thought I was ready. You know, I really thought I needed, I was ready to admit that I was powerless over alcohol and that my life had become unmanageable. But I wasn't ready yet, you know. I began working the steps with her, and she was my sponsor, but I wasn't honest with her, you know. I met a guy, and I thought the guy was going to fix me. And he was in AA, and about a month sober, I started dating him. And then he drank, and he had about a year at the time. And I remember him telling me, and my response was, "That's not a problem. I got this. I can handle it. I'll keep going to AA. And, you know, you can drink if you feel like you're not alcoholic, and we can stay together. It's fine. No big deal." Because I got it, you know. There's no higher power in my life at this point, except for him. You know, he was my higher power. But I didn't tell my sponsor, I didn't run any of this by her, I didn't talk about it. And so I just decided not to go to as many meetings. I wasn't calling her as often. I was hanging out with him. I started going to bars. I thought I was okay. And, you know, I got myself into a situation where somebody said, you sure you don't want to take a sip? I said, I just have a sip. So I had a sip, and nothing happened. So I was like, oh, that's right, okay, you got this. And, you know, and I was like, but I'm not going to tell anybody because I don't think that's probably a good thing to share. And so I kept going to, like, my two meetings a week, you know. And then it was my birthday, and poor girl, she took me out to dinner, and she had all these people come, and I was just, you know, self-pity, like, this is my birthday, I'm going to dinner, this is so boring, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, and I went home that night, and guess what I did, you know, I drank the way I like to drink, and I didn't tell anybody, and I kept coming around, because I had to save face, and I had to come up with another plan, because I don't like people not thinking that I look okay. I'm very concerned with what other people think of me, you know, and as long as, like I said before, as long as that looked okay, we were good. And so I struggle with anorexia. I did for a long time, and at the time I was seeing someone for that as well. And I said, you know what? That is the problem. I have an eating disorder. If I can get that straight, then I bet you I can drink normally. And so that's what I told her, you know. I said, I'm going to leave because I have a nutritionist and a therapist and a psychiatrist, and I'm going to be great. And, but thank you for everything. And I left, and within 3 weeks, you know, so crazy. It makes me sad. I, like, wish I didn't have to go through it. But, you know, within 3 weeks, you know, I was with that guy, and I started, you know, I set up a happy hour with, like, people. And I went and I got wasted. And I wound up, like, hooking up with this random guy all the while. This other guy, my boyfriend at the time, was trying to get in touch with me, which is, like, par for the course with me when I'm drinking. And we got up the next morning and started drinking again. And we went down to Ocean City. And I don't remember a lot of it. All I remember is that I did my typical stuff, you know, and, you know, I was getting attention from wherever, and my boyfriend at the time was being boring, and so we needed to go do something else, and he got upset, and it turned into a physical altercation, which the police got involved in, and it was actually against me, you know, this time. I've been guilty of my own stuff. And I can remember him getting arrested, and I can remember the police taking me to a motel room with his best friend who was with us at the time. And I can remember being like, I'm starting to come to. We need to go drink more. You know, it wasn't like, I've just been through this traumatic experience. It was, we need to go drink more. And then I went and drank more, and I don't remember anything. And I remember just waking up in bed next to his best friend, you know, and going into the bathroom and just having, like, the whole side of my face, you know, just being black and blue, you know, and bruises on my arm, and being in this motel room with this guy who I barely knew, and knowing that I had just done something with him, I don't know what, and that I didn't know what to do. And so I was like, well, we need to figure this out, because I need to come up with a plan. I'm a little bit of a control freak. And so we went to go to lunch, and I had one drink at lunch, and then I don't remember anything, you know. And then I woke up in the motel room by myself, black and blue, and I was like, what am I going to do? And the only person that I could call was my dad. And my dad had to drive all the way. He was in Chicago for work. He flew back from Chicago to Maryland. And then he drove all the way down to Maryland with my sister in the car, my mom in the car, and picked me up and took me home and let me sleep at their house, a complete mess, black and blue, and took care of me. And within 3 days, I said, I need to go home and take care of my cat. And really what I wanted to do was to go back be able to drink the way I wanted to drink, you know, and he had said to me at that point, I'm done with you, and I was like, Dad, no, I guess so sad, but in my mind, I was like, you're not done with me, I know you're not done with me, you know, that's how I was like, you're not done yet, I'm just going to make you love me again, you know, and my poor dad, you know, I love him to pieces, and he just wanted the best for me, you know. And so I went off, and I drank some more, and I'm realizing that I've been talking for a while, but I continued on drinking like this, and I went back to that boyfriend, you know, and didn't get better. And I got to a point where I was so terrified, because I was in a spot where I was getting these insane, very scary text from him because I cheated on him again and he'd found out, and threatening and just feeling really scared about what was going to happen there and scared because I couldn't stop drinking and I didn't know what to do. And I remember one night I was so just in the state and I started drinking and it just couldn't come to me fast enough, you know, and I just panicked, you know. I started to have, like, a panic attack half drunk, and I called my parents again, and my poor mom and dad came and got me, and they're like, do we take you to the hospital? What do we do with you? And I was just, like, back and forth in the backseat of the car, just ranting and just in a state. And, you know, the next morning I got up, and I went back home, and the next day was, you know, my sobriety day. You know, and I started to come back to AA, and I truly think, you know, it was because mentally at that point I knew that the thought that was going through my mind was, I would rather die than drink like this. I would walk across, you know, the Memorial Bridge in D.C. from my house in Georgetown, and I would just be like, I want to jump off. You know, I just can't do this. Because every time I tried to stop drinking, I was so uncomfortable. I couldn't fathom living my life without drinking, and I would always go back. And then when I'd start to drink, I couldn't control the amount that I took, you know. And I can remember this time I got a sponsor. The way it happened was I went to this meeting on Thursday, and this woman who, this is the amazing part of AA. It's like you just never know who's going to, you know, like touch you, you know. And this woman just came up to me, and she was like, are you new? And I was like, yeah, you know, my name's Jenny, and, you know, I'm new. And she was like, well, I go to all these different meetings in Maryland. You should really come check them out. Why don't you just come spend some time with me? And, you know, she started picking me up and taking me to meetings and introducing me to people and calling me and getting me connected. And I would go to these meetings, and people would just swarm me, you know, and just come up and get my number and call me and pick me up. I didn't have a car at the time, and take me places, you know, and I'm, you know, very, very grateful for that, you know. And then she introduced me to my first sponsor. And, you know, this woman was just awesome. She put up with so much selfishness, you know, when I got here. I was just a mess. And she, you know, she began to work the steps with me, you know, and she told me what meetings she went to, and she made the suggestion, I think you should go to a meeting every day, you know, and we're going to work the steps together, you know, and I really want you to try to reach out to people and, you know, try to call 5 people a day and make plans before the meeting and get busy here, and let's get some service positions, let's do some things. And they were like little actions, you know, actions that seemed like very hard at the time, you know, like a big deal. Like, really? You want me to go to 7 meetings a week? That sounds insane. And, you know, or you want me to get a service position, or you want me to call people? What am I going to talk about? You know, like, that was just not something that I knew how to do without drinking. And so she, you know, she started working the steps with me. And I can remember the first time, you know, we were going through and read it. She just read the big book with me, you know, and she'd alternate when we got through a step, we would read it in the 12 and 12. And, you know, for me at that point, it was like I could see that my life was unmanageable and that I was powerless over alcohol. And I did struggle with for a while, and I can still struggle with to this day, is that, is the idea that, that I'm not in charge. You know, I really had a hard time with that in the beginning. I could get the unmanageability relating to alcohol, and I could get that I was powerless over alcohol and that I needed help, you know. But I had a hard time with you telling me, being honest with you about the other things that were going on with my life and asking you for input on that. Like, that was not okay. And what I found was that, you know, over time, you know, I've gotten myself into a lot of pain here because I've tried to do things my way. And slowly, I've come to realize how unmanageable my life is by me, you know? And it was like, in the beginning, I needed a higher power. I needed a higher power. I could see how I needed a higher power to stop drinking because it wasn't going to be me who was going to stop, you know? And I needed this program. And from that perspective, it was like, you know, I began a relationship with a higher power, which for me was the group and the program for a long time, you know, and it still can be. And then what I've learned is that I need a higher power in all aspects of my life, because when I try to run the show and when I'm in the bondage of self, I get into a lot of pain. And when I get into a lot of pain, if I'm not honest with my sponsor and if I'm not willing to do something different, I will get to a point where a drink looks good again, you know, and I've come close to that twice, you know, since I've come here, because I'm pretty sure I know how to do things, you know, and then I've gotten honest, and it's been amazing what I can do when I get some direction, and, you know, I realize that Jenny's not running the show, you know. And what has been very, very important to that ability for me to be honest is, you know, when I did my first, fourth, and fifth step, you know, because I'd never been honest with anybody about anything. I wanted to appear a certain way. I didn't want to let you in on what was really going on within me, you know, and when I did that for the first time, it was really scary, you know, and I was very afraid to have to share all of those things that I'd done, you know. All my resentments, all my fears, you know, my sex inventory with somebody else. And, but it was, once I did it, it was very freeing, you know, and that began a relationship that is very important to me today, you know, my relationship with my sponsor and my ability to be honest with her and to take a 10-step with her on a regular basis helps me stay on the track that I need to be on, you know. And with 6 and 7, probably on 6 and 7 right now, in fact, I think I am, you know, I struggle with my defects of character. Those are my tools that I brought with me once I got rid of alcohol, you know, and I like to use them. They're very comfortable, but they don't build character, and they certainly hurt my relationships, you know. And the most important thing with those is that I found that I have to be willing to try to do something different. I have to see those things that are apparent in my fifth step, you know, in my fourth and fifth step with the help of my sponsor. And I have to be honest with them about my sponsor when I'm engaging in them, you know. And then I have to be willing to try to do something different. And I have a choice every day, you know. And some days I'm better at it than others. But I can see those defects, you know, and I know that they're there now. And I have someone who, my sponsor, who helps me when I'm not sure quite what to do, you know. And I can be honest with her about that when I make a mistake. And that leads into 8 and 9, you know. I can get, I had to clean up the past. I'm still cleaning up the past, especially with my parents, you know. And that was something that's been, with guidance of my sponsor, you know, I've been able to identify those people on my fourth and fifth step that I needed to make amends to, the financial amends that I needed to make, whatever they looked like, you know, I've begun to make them, and some are ongoing, you know. I have to really show through my actions that I'm going to be different before I can make an amends to my dad, you know, and so I'm still in that process, but I also need those steps because on a daily basis, I can screw up, and I need to make amends. And through the 10th step, my sponsor helps me to identify those situations, or I can identify them myself and then talk to her about how to handle it. I've had to make an amends this week. You know, I got really into being in control again, and I impacted someone very close to me, you know, and lashed out at them, and I had to make an amends, you know. But with my 10th step, I can look at all that, and she helps guide me through it. And the 11th step, you know, I try to pray every morning and night, the 3rd and 7th step prayer. My sponsor gives me, has given me direction to do the St. Francis prayer because I like to think about me and I don't like to think about other people. And she wants me to remember that it's to be, it's, you know, gosh, you know, to love rather than to be loved, you know. And all the different things it says there is a beautiful, beautiful prayer, and it brings me back when I'm feeling uncomfortable, you know, and reminds me to try and comfort rather than to have other people comfort and take care of me. You know, I really liked people taking care of me for a long time. So I try to do that, and I've thought about meditation, too, you know, meditative meetings, yoga. I run, that's meditative to me. It's very helpful. And then the 12th step is one that is so important to me. And I only have about a minute, but I cannot tell you how much it's changed my life to try and help another alcoholic. That, for me, has been the biggest eye-opener, you know. It's a way I can look right into my own soul, you know. And I see myself in other people, and they speak, God speaks through them, you know. And it can be in any way. I see that person who introduced herself to me that one meeting and gave me a ride and introduced me to people. She wasn't my sponsor, but you know what? She helped me so much. You know, and it's just the little things that you can do, and you got to try to look for them to give this back, you know. And when I'm in that mode, I feel peace, you know. And I'm grateful for that step because it makes this program, you know, really, it passes it on. Passed it on to me, and that's my objective, is to try and bring it to other people, you know. And I'm very grateful for it. And I think I'm out of time. So thank you so much for having me. And thanks for letting me share.